Hey, gang. Are you in a band in Austin and you're looking to make the leap from band of schmoes to full-on pros? Well, you can start by rehearsing at Space. Space is a state-of-the-art, affordable venue for rehearsal and recording located just a few short miles south of downtown Austin. With 31 rooms, plenty of spacious corridor space to roll your stuff down the hallways, a friendly and courteous staff, some rooms even have windows. You can call them at 512-448-9518 or go to spaceatx.com. That's Space Rehearsal and Recording. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
Hello, you guys. How are you? I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic show for you today. My guest is Bob Schneider, fantastic and amazing musician. But before we get into too much, I want to say a guy that played in one of the bands that Bob had, the Scabs, and a guy that I knew for a long time, definitely 20 years or so, maybe a little more, Charles Reeser passed away this week. And very sad. I want to send out my condolences to his family and to this community, which is already kind of reeling from another loss. So, remember everyone that you love and be sure you reach out and tell people that you love them and connect with people. Charles was a really nice guy. I didn't know him that well, but I knew him for a long time, saw him at the clubs. We hang out and talk, and I always thought he was an amazing musician and a really sweet guy. So, God bless you, Charles. All right. Man, what a heavy kind of week this has been. I totally went into this interview to meet Bob today with that. Like, I totally unloaded on him when I got there. I feel kind of embarrassed about it, but no, I'm not embarrassed about it. You know why? Because he listened, and he was really kind. He's an empathetic person, and he's my friend. And he listened to my woes. I was pretty stressed out, but then we had a great conversation. I always enjoy talking to Bob. He's got a Pledge Music campaign going on right now that has two more weeks going for his new album, King Kong, which will be coming out in early 2015. He is projecting a release date of Valentine's Day 2015, where he will be doing a big show at the ACL Moody Theater, which he does every year. Now, he's about to do some theater shows here in Texas. On the 19th of December, he will be at the Yucca Theater Midland. On December 20th, he will be at Green Hall in New Braunfels. On December 27th, he will be at the Granada Theater in Dallas. And on December 31st, he will be at the Paramount Theater here in Austin with special guest, the Wind and the Wave. Very good friends of the podcast. Love those guys. And anyway, you can help him out, get his new album out. You got two more weeks left to help him get King Kong out. And I hope that you enjoy our conversation. We had a really, I think we had a great conversation. I had a great time talking to him. We laughed a lot. We met in an undisclosed location, in a neutral location, in like a dining room. So that was interesting. So it has kind of like that dining room sound. So before we get to that, I want to tell you, at Christmas, it's Christmas time, right? It's time to shop for Christmas. I like to give the gift of music, and by doing that, I have to go buy music. And last year, I realized that if you go and buy music by an artist in a record store, a locally owned record store, not a Best Buy or a Target or anything, you will be helping out the community. So if everyone goes out and buys at least everyone listening to this thing, buy at least one or two records in local record stores, you will be helping out your local music community, your local record stores. You'll be helping out the local business community. So this week, I went to a record store called Antone's Records on Guadalupe here in Austin. And I went and talked to Eve Monse, one of the owners. She was just on it. She's in the Blue Bonnets. She's a legit musician, lover of music. And I went to Antone's Records to find out, you know, all these independent record stores have some kind of specialty. So you can go there, and if you're looking for a specific thing, you kind of know what record store might be able to accommodate you the best. So I went to Antone's Records. I sat down with Eve for a couple minutes, and she filled me in on what makes Antone's uniquely Antone's. Here we go. Here's Eve Monse.
Mm-hmm.
So Yves Moncey, we're here at Antone's Records, and you know that for the holidays, I try and do shopping in local record stores and encourage my listeners to do the same thing. There's a handful of record stores here in Austin, which we're really lucky. Other towns don't really have that. Like Houston only has, it probably has less than us too.
Yeah, we have a lot.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We do have a lot, but each one seems to have a different specialty and something that if you're looking for, you can find it here. What is that for Antone's Records?
Well, first of all, I think people assume that it's blues,
right,
which we definitely have a lot of blues.
Right.
And Clifford Antone, obviously, when he started the store, he wanted to make sure that was a big focus. So we always make sure we have plenty of blues, whether it's LP or CD. But what we sell the most of are used LPs, typically classic rock records. And that's kind of our bread and butter. We have all kinds of stuff. We try to have as much of a variety as possible, but most of what we're selling, you know, is just good classic rock vinyl. We also, you know, have a lot of local artists. We have a Texas section.
Oh, you do?
Yeah,
that's
both
good.
Both for our CDs and for our LPs. And the cool thing about that too, somebody will be browsing that section and find an artist that maybe they didn't even know was from Texas. So
that's kind of a neat
way to shop. You know? We also have, I guess, formats that other stores don't have, like 78s, and our cassette section has expanded again.
Oh, wow.
Which it went way down. It's starting to grow a little bit again. We have 8-tracks.
You do?
We have,
that's
yeah,
awesome.
A handful of 8-tracks, and we have a really large section of 45s. So,
fantastic.
So I think what we offer maybe is we have some formats that other stores don't have,
yeah,
and then we just have a really deep selection of used vinyl.
Yeah. And you know what I was realizing when I was coming up here is the location is so groovy.
Yeah.
But it would groovy when it opened too, because it's like right on the drag and like,
yeah.
Yeah, you can walk around and do stuff. It's a nice place to stop in and pick up some records.
It is, and it's convenient for people to walk up and down the street, check out the other shops. This block, you know, with all the changes that have gone on in Austin, this block still has a lot of stuff happening. Our neighbors at Tom's have been there a long time, and they're even having some live music there occasionally.
I saw that.
Yeah. And then, you know, across the street, you've got Spider House and I Love Video. And actually, where I Love Video is located is where the Antone's nightclub was for many years.
Are you even old enough to have gone?
I went twice. My dad took me when I was like 11. You know,
oh, really?
I got to see Rocky Erickson and I got to see Doug Somm.
Oh, there
so
you go.
So I feel like I at least got to see something really cool there, even though I missed a lot of the blues guys.
Yeah, and you guys do in-stores here too, right?
We do in-stores, okay. Yes.
You did a Blue Bonnets in-store.
Yeah, which was a blast.
Yeah. And do you have any coming up that people might be interested in?
We're doing an event this coming Sunday that's the actual music portion of it's going to be next door at Tom's, but it's a benefit and memorial both for Little Joe Washington, who's a Houston blues man that just passed. This time of year we get a little hectic with retail stuff, so the in-stores are mostly going to be, I guess, starting back up in January.
So that's Sunday the 14th? December 14th.
Yes, this
okay,
Sunday.
Yeah. Okay, perfect.
So, yeah, we'll just be kind of celebrating Little Joe.
Does he have records? I saw him play a couple of times. I actually tried to get him on my podcast.
Oh, that would have been fantastic.
There was a communication.
Yeah.
He was definitely in a different century.
Yes.
Because when I was explaining it to him, he just was like, I don't think that's even real, dude.
Right. No, very unique individual. He does have some records out. He recorded with Dial Tone Records, which is a local Austin label.
Really?
Run by Eddie Stout. Yeah,
okay.
I think he had two releases on Dial Tone.
Good.
He had such a crazy, wild career. I mean, you know, he played with Johnny Guitar Watson and all these guys, you know, back in the day.
Yeah.
And he was just, you know, a lot of people remember him as being just a crazy onstage performer.
I've never seen anybody play guitar with his feet while playing a Casio.
Yeah, right.
I mean, he was literally doing the whole thing. It was like nothing.
I know. Yeah. And I remember years ago somebody told me, if Little Joe ever wants to borrow your guitar, say no.
Yeah. He's going to put his feet
you
all
don't know
over
what
it.
He's going to do to it. Yeah.
So, do you have records of his here? I'm sorry
to
go on a
should.
Little Joe thing, but
yeah, yes, we should. And if we're out, we'll get some more from Eddie soon. But we normally do have his stuff in stock, and
good.
That's one of the few releases that Dial Tone. I think it might be the only release that Dial Tone did on vinyl as well as CD.
Oh, I'm going to get some of that on vinyl.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So what time is the event on Sunday?
That's going to be at 3 o'clock.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll be listening to some of his stuff here at the store, and then there'll be some people playing
I'll
Tom's
be here.
Next door.
Yeah. I liked that guy a lot.
Yeah.
I got the chance to see him in Houston. He played before Skyrocket a few times.
Oh,
and
cool. At the Continental Club?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So what is the address here? I'm sorry. I meant to know that before
I came.
No, it's okay.
Here. It's 2928 Guadalupe, which is between 29th and 30th.
Yep. And it is by Buffalo Exchange for
That's
those
right.
of you who do the clothes shopping.
That's
and
right.
And right next to Tom's Tabbouleh.
Yes.
Tom Abdenor was the first guy that ever gave me a job. That
really?
Wasn't related to me. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
I had no idea.
I was 16.
My goodness. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's
All
a
right.
great guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's
so,
interesting.
Is there anything I'm missing about the store, Eve? Anything, one last thing people should know? I think they should come out to the event on Sunday.
Yeah, you know,
and get
I think,
an idea of the community.
Exactly. Just, you know, I think everybody kind of has their own version of what the store means to them. You know,
yeah.
I mean, the fact that the store's been here since 87 says a lot.
Yeah.
And yeah, and you know, to me, I guess I see a lot of people coming up with used records to the register all the time, but, you know, there's other people who come in that look at the T-shirts or the posters. We've
yeah.
got a lot. We've got a lot of posters. You know, a lot of old.
It's a record
posters.
Store.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of stuff.
A record
so.
Store. Yeah. Records, T-shirts, posters.
Right.
Old magazines.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you know, we try to have things that you can't find everywhere else. I
Good.
Mean, that's the idea, and just sort of preserve the Alston culture, the music
yeah.
culture, as much local stuff as we can. You know, obviously too.
Yeah. It's
yeah.
awesome that you do that. It your age hits me at times and I'm like, you really have such a reverence that you really shouldn't have. You should be at Diplo shows or something, right?
Yeah, right. Thanks. Thank you.
Why aren't you at the Major Lazer concert right
I
now?
I don't know. Well, I mean, this, you know, I started shopping here when I was a kid, you know,
yeah.
and I mean, that was such a big part of my education. So
yeah.
to have an opportunity to, you know, give back to that is fantastic.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, Eve, I think everyone should come here 2928.
Yes.
Guadalupe.
Guadalupe.
Yeah.
You said it correctly.
I am Cuban. come down here, shop, and your hours, you're open 7 days a week.
We are 10 a.m., 10 p.m. Monday through Saturday, and 11 a.m., 8 p.m. on Sunday.
Great. And 4 p.m. this Sunday, December 14th, for the Little Joe.
Yeah. Come by and hang out.
Right. Thanks, Eve.
Thank you, John. I want to love you.
You make it hard. Yeah, Eve Monse, over there at the Antones Records, man. She's legit, man. She's a rock and roller. She was just on with the Blue Bonnets. That show was amazing. Get on out to the record store, your local record store. Get on out to Antones this Sunday and check out the Little Joe Memorial. That'll be great, man. I'm going to go out there. That's going to be fantastic. I liked that guy. He was an amazing entertainer. I did see him play guitar with his feet and Casio with his hands. It was unbelievable. All right, let's get to our main conversation here today. With Bob Schneider, old friend of mine, fantastic guy, has a Pledge Music campaign that has 2 more weeks left for his new album, King Kong. I met him in an undisclosed location in a dining room. We sat down and had a great conversation. So enjoy it. Here's my friend, Bob Schneider. Let's get down. I really don't. I mean, I don't have any connection to what she's trying to say. I feel like I have more connection with that All About That Bass song.
I love that song.
Yeah, it's a great song. And I know that Taylor Swift is supposed to write great songs, but there's just something like... there's something about like when I first became aware of her and was like, okay, I'm going to listen to this and find out who this person is before
sure.
I rail on her.
Right.
And so... she was singing about all like how tough it is being going unnoticed and being this, and she's like a fucking famous pop star that's beautiful and blonde and
yeah.
everybody loves her.
Try
like,
being,
what the fuck is wrong with her?
Try being a 40-something-year-old and giving your entire life over to a craft and then being unnoticed.
Yeah.
Then you might be able to write a decent song about it.
Yeah.
But not when you're, like, she was a superstar when she was, what, 17, 18?
Something like that, yeah.
nobody's not noticing her. And she was beautiful. Yeah. So she was noticed her whole life.
But it's also like, it's not like she became, it's not like she had like the background of like Charlie and Will that makes them interesting. You know what I mean? When they were teen, well, they weren't as famous as she was, but you know what I mean? Like she wrote this song about New York that I guess is really big right now. And I listened to that song. And if I was from New York, I'd find her and beat the shit out of her. She's like, it's like, she moved there and has lived there for like 6 months. And it's like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, sure. This is my town. I'm, you know, I'm New York lady. I don't even know where she's from.
I've written songs about New York, and I have never been in New York for more than a few days at a time.
Do you like it?
I'm fine with people writing songs about stuff. All of my songs I'm writing about things I don't know anything about.
Okay, that's weird because
I'm making up stuff.
Yeah, there's got to be shit that you're not making up because I went into, and I got to say this, I think you are so amazingly talented that when you sit down and spend, like yesterday, I went running and then, actually the day before too, if you just listen to your collection of music on shuffle, mm-hmm. which I'm sure you do on a daily basis.
I
didn't think you did. It is astounding. Like everything, it's astounding. You are an exceedingly talented person with like a very huge spigot that's totally open and flowing. It's amazing.
Well, thanks. It's weird. It's hard. Here's what's hard for me. Like for you, first of all, I want to hear what you're telling me.
Yeah.
Like I love hearing it.
Yeah.
At the same time, I know how talented I am. And I immediately want to convince you that I'm not as talented as you might think I am, or that my body of work would suggest that I am.
Right.
But what I need to do is just accept that, like hear you say it, and then go, thank you. And then go, yeah, I do have quite a few good songs. I'm very proud of my body of work. I've spent a lot of time working on it. I'm very diligent about it. I am... What is that? Sorry.
It's like a safe house or something.
It really feels that way. Like nobody knows we're here.
Yeah.
We should not be expecting any visitors.
We can't really open the cabinets and nothing here is ours. Yeah. Here we go. All right. So you're getting okay with your body of work?
No. I mean, I'm very proud of what I've done. I'm very... But... It is weird that the first thing that I want to do when I hear somebody complimenting me, in my mind, I try not to do it actually in real life, but in my mind, the first thing is like, yeah, but you haven't seen all the stuff that I've discarded or all the waste byproduct of my songwriting. I mean, I've written 1,500 songs at this point. I've only released maybe a couple hundred of those.
Yeah.
The rest of them aren't that good.
Yeah.
But I will say, I mean, I do take it very seriously, and I do enjoy the craft of writing songs, and I put a lot of care in it, and I definitely want things to be, I don't know, I remember going into Waterloo Records about, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago, and somebody had told me about Randy Newman, so I went and bought all of Randy Newman's albums at once and just listen to them all. And I was like, you know, in 20 years, I want somebody to be able to go in to a record store or wherever you get music and get the Bob Schneider collection of music and enjoy all of it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want there to be any filler in any of the records. I just want it to be all good. I want the work to speak for itself. And I feel pretty good about what I've done in terms of that. You know, I think everything I did before I started putting out Bob Schneider records, like all my band stuff, is very spotty, and there's hardly any of it that I like. And I played with great musicians. It's not any of their fault. I take most of the credit because I wrote all the lyrics and wrote a lot of the songs, but I didn't really like the work that I did back then. Basically, all the work that I did before, you know, my 20s, it's all very... hard for me to listen to, you know. I don't think it's very good.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people, when they first, especially older people, you know, maybe when they first started coming to see me play, maybe they saw me in those bands. And maybe that's what they know me from. They're like, oh, that's the guy that plays the dance music or the funk music or the rap music or whatever. It's silly. It's fun. You know, it's music where there's chicks at the show and you can get laid and whatever. But it's, you know, it's not to be taken seriously at all. And, you know, that's old people. And then I think young people have this thing where they're like, oh, that's my parents' music. That's the guy that, you know.
Dad rock.
That's dad rock. Exactly. Like, that's... I wouldn't like it because it's not for me. That guy's older. He's been around for a while. I haven't heard it. It's not being fed to me by my peers. Like, my peers aren't talking about it. They're not saying, this guy's worth checking out. So it's weird. I have this weird this weird demographic of people. But I will say this. They are, like, real hardcore fans.
Yeah, they
like,
love you.
My fans are dedicated and possessive, and they're scary sometimes. Kind of scary, but they're cool. I appreciate and I'm grateful for them. And I haven't always felt that way either. I've kind of taken it for granted in the past, but now, man, I don't take anything for granted. You know, the music business is getting harder and harder to make a living. The fact that I can do it makes me feel like incredibly lucky. As hard as I work, I don't take it for granted. Like, I just want to keep working hard. I want to keep being interesting, relevant. You know, I don't want to take it for granted.
That's a weird term, though, right? Relevant. Is anything, you know what I mean? Like, there's so, like, relevant. It seems like now in this day and age, you have your demographic, like you said, your base, and you can go and find. It seems like things don't happen on a large scale anymore, like in the Beatles playing Ed Sullivan or Joe Rockhead on Tuesdays at the Black Cat. Like,
right.
You know what I mean? There's so much more happening all at once that you can find exactly what you're into. I'm into. Someone says, "Oh, I'm into Bob Schneider." They can just get into you, stay into you. You're feeding them content all the time. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Does that make sense? To me,
absolutely.
Relevance is like a very specific term now as opposed to broad relevance.
I guess when I say relevant, I mean relevant to myself.
That's good.
As long as I'm making songs that I feel good about, like that move me,
yeah,
that create some sort of energy, like when I'm performing them and when I'm writing them, then, you know, that's what I'm looking for. I write a song every week because I do the songwriting game, and some weeks I'll write something and it's just a song, you know, it didn't quite make it.
Yeah.
And then every once in a while I'll write something that I'm really happy with that excites me.
Yeah.
Maybe I like the lyric or the melody or something about it. Something about it is new and exciting for me to listen to and to perform. So, I mean, that's what I'm after. It doesn't happen every time.
But that's good that you accept it as that, because some people get precious about it. I know that I have been at times where I will just start a song and it's hard to get over yourself because you want to finish something that's great when you know, usually going into it, if it's amazing or if it's like crappy. Well,
yeah, I mean, sometimes you don't know if something's good or bad.
Yeah,
like you're
just
working on it and you're like, I don't think this is very good. And then you finish it and maybe a week or two later you realize, oh, this is actually better than I thought.
Right, but that's the point, is that you finish it.
I have to finish it because I have a deadline
every
week, which I've set for myself and I've set for these other songwriters that are in the group.
Right.
And so I have to turn in something. So it's 10 o'clock on Sunday night and I've got 2 hours to write and record a song and send it in. And sometimes those are my best songs when I've got to get it done. So I'm just writing whatever I'm writing. I'm playing it is what it is. And I just send it out. And then the next day I'm like, wow, that's really kind of cool.
Yeah. You know,
I didn't get precious about it. I didn't try to shape it into something that it wasn't. And I wasn't trying to write the, I wasn't trying to write some hit. I was just trying to write a song.
Right.
And it's when you're just trying to write a song that you do write the songs that are the great songs. Like yeah. when, you know, when Paul McCartney or John Lennon or whatever were writing those, you know, iconic Beatles songs, they were just writing songs mm-hmm. to kind of maybe fuck with each other even, you know, yeah. like say, hey, I can, look at what I can do. Look yeah. what I can do. Look yeah. what I can do. They weren't like, you know, maybe after a while.
Sure.
You know, maybe later on they were like, yeah, maybe what we're doing is really gonna make a huge difference. I don't know, but I for me, the thing that stops me quicker than anything is trying to write something great. Like I
try to write something.
Well, the critical voice in my head just takes over. Right. And then no matter what I write, it's like, oh, that's been done.
Yeah.
I've heard that before.
Yeah.
That's stupid. Yeah. That's too silly. That's too serious.
Yeah.
It just doesn't end.
But see, that's another thing about your music is that I feel like there's no, you don't have rules of silly or serious, because there's fucking serious gravity going on, and then also, you know,
inanity,
off the wall inanity. Yeah,
there is. It is crazy. Like I think about it sometimes, because I look at a band like The National, who, like, if you listen to their music, like, they don't put anything in there that's not like, doesn't sound intelligent or have gravitas, or, you know what I mean?
It's yeah.
or they're not gonna like write a blues song.
Right.
They're not gonna write some silly throwaway thing. Like right. everything they do has this agenda to it. And like, I'll write songs, like one of my songs that I've been playing for 15 years now is called Bombonanza.
I love that song.
Which is a fun song to yeah. play live.
Yeah.
But, sorry about that.
That's all right.
But, you know, The National's not going to play Bombonanza. It doesn't make any sense. It's right. it's a silly song that's about a made-up word. But I love playing it.
Yeah.
I don't even think about it anymore. I don't think about how stupid the song is.
Right.
And I've got a lot of songs like that that are really pretty stupid if you look at them.
Sure.
Like if you analyze them.
But that really makes you a little more well-rounded, you know what I mean? Because it shows that you have the ability to be serious and sincere and also inane.
I like the combo.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like if all the songs were silly, sure. that would be ridiculous. Because life's not silly all the time. But life's not serious and sad and dour all the time either. It's just a combination of all kinds of stuff. You know, there are times when, like that movie Lincoln, like the thing I loved about that movie so much was like they showed how like this normal human being rose to the occasion and became this amazing great leader yeah. of our country and really said some incredible things and just rose to the occasion. At the same time, he was, you know, in this fucked up relationship with this crazy woman, and he didn't know how to be a father, and he was yeah. faulted, and, you know, and we're all like that. We all have our strengths and our weaknesses, and, like, I like the fact that my music has all of me in it, because yeah. I'm stupid as fuck sometimes, and then sometimes I'll say something really that makes a lot of sense and is real serious.
Yeah.
And, you know, you know, I'm really sad sometimes, and sometimes I'm just ridiculous, yeah. you know? And so I like that the music that I've made has all of that in it. I don't, when I'm writing music, I don't put a lot of rules on what I'm writing.
You can tell. And that's, I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean,
yeah,
like,
sure,
there's no...
Sure. No, there are no rules. It's, yeah.
It's not like punk rock or indie rock where, like, if you do this, you sure. are not doing... Yeah, like, there's none of that in your music, which is totally refreshing.
Yeah, and I mean, lots of time. And you're hearing really a thin sliver of yeah. what I do. Lots of stuff that I write and record, I can't even play live because it's so ridiculous and crazy. Some of it's just super experimental and spoken word and... you know, it's
you're
really
just doing stuff.
I'm trying to do is I'm trying to make something interesting really, that's all I'm doing. It doesn't have to be good or bad, but ultimately, I want it to be interesting. I don't want it to be boring. I don't want it to sound like something else. That's like a big pet peeve of mine. Like when I hear some music that sounds like something else, even like that All About the Bass song is really like two other songs
yeah.
that they've copied pretty closely.
Whatever that Cajun song.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what the roots are, but I heard it, I was like, that's like two other songs. Mm-hmm. But they're two great songs, and they've changed them enough to make a new song that is pretty cool.
Right.
But, like, I would have a hard time writing that song
right.
the way it is, because it sounds too much like something else. But the thing, I don't know, I think the thing that I'm pretty good at is steering away from stuff that I've heard. And also the other thing that I have going for me is I'm not good at playing really any instrument. So if I try to play something that I've heard, I don't know how to do it. So it comes out different. And I'll tell somebody, I'm like, oh yeah, this is this song.
Right.
And they're like, no, it's not, dude. that's what I was trying to play.
Yeah.
But it came out fucked up because I don't know how to play guitar very well or piano very well. And I don't even know how
to... You just described half of me and Darren's relationship.
Oh, yeah. Like, Darren...
Is this it? No, that's not
right.
it, dude.
Right, exactly. Like, Darren be like, no, the melody's... And you just sang...
Right.
But in your head...
Yeah.
You sang the thing.
But yeah, sometimes I hear minor things when they're not... Right. Like, if someone... You know how, like, their relative minors, like an E minor 7 is almost the same as a G?
I guess.
You know what I'm saying? Those things totally, like, I'll hear the darker thing before I'll hear the sort of brighter major chord.
Yeah. I mean, just the fact that the only reason that I know that a G and an E minor are similar is because I have this vocal effects thing.
Oh, right, yeah,
And if I'm using it on autotune, which will auto-correct your voice to a scale,
right.
If I'm playing E minor, I have to set it to G major for it to be that scale.
Right.
But other than that, I would have never known what you just said. Right. Like, I don't know anything about music theory at all. I feel like the more of that stuff that I know, the less conducive it is for me to just listen to what's being played.
Right.
Like, when I'm playing something, I'm just listening to see how it feels.
That's exactly how I hear it, too.
And then afterwards, then I go in, and usually I have to ask the guys in my band, I'm like, what chords are these?
Yeah.
Because I don't know. And then they're like, oh, that's an A minor. I'm like, I should have probably known that.
Well, I mean, it would be tough if you were like a sideman trying to like go play a session in Nashville.
Right,
but
right.
For you, it works.
Yeah, I don't need to know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a question. Oh, I wanted to ask you about the videos. You did a lot of videos for your last album, and then I just started going through your videos. You made a lot of videos, and you've done them with some really interesting...
People.
There's one where a girl uncovers you and your face is in plastic, you're kind of dead, and she brings you back.
Oh, yeah.
Is that... There was two videos for that song, right?
No, just one video for that song. I think there might have been maybe a lyrics video for it as well, but I think you're thinking of Swimming in the Sea.
Yeah, sorry.
But basically what I did on the last record, Burden of Proof, was... we put strings on all the songs. So all the songs have the cinematic quality to them just because of the string arrangements. And so the idea that we came up with was, why don't we go and ask some directors if they want to make like a little mini movie, like a 3-minute or 4-minute movie, depending on how long the song is. They can make a movie about whatever they want. They just use the song as the soundtrack.
Okay.
And then I'm available if they want to use me, but if they don't want to use me at all, they can just do whatever they want.
Right.
And we gave everybody $1,000, so it kept the budget real low. So it was $12,000 for 12 videos. And also leveled the playing field because nobody got any more or less. So,
right.
Like, we used, like, Robert Rodriguez. And
yeah, that was great.
And Dan Winters, who's a real famous photographer. And normally those guys would require a lot more money because they have big crews. But what it did was it made...
People get creative.
It made it so they had to do it themselves.
Yeah.
And so, and they had to kind of get down to the root of it. But I thought it turned out really good.
Me too.
People really, you know, the idea was, the other thing too is a lot of times, like, you know, like somebody like Dan, who's a photographer, he gets these jobs and he's got to like photograph somebody and he's got an art director and they want to go a certain direction.
Right.
So a lot of times if you're an artist, you don't necessarily get to do what you want to do, even though you're, you know, on top of your field or whatever.
Yeah.
So I thought it'd be interesting to like let these guys do whatever they want to do. Just do what you want to do. Of course, you have to use the song.
Right.
And so I thought people took advantage of that in this. And I was really happy overall with how the videos turned out.
Yeah, they were great. And they were really, some of them are really, like that one where that girl uncovers you, that was really intense.
Real intense, yeah. That was Owen Edgerton did that. And
Who is that?
Owen Edgerton, he's probably most well known in town for starting that Sinus Theater thing a few years back, and now he does Master Pancake.
Right.
And but he's also a writer and he's also a director. And he did a short film that I saw that was amazing. And so I just asked him if he wanted to be a part of it, and then he came up with that idea. He's really into horror movies and really dark stuff, so it kind of worked.
There was a horror movie aesthetic bit to it, but it was more like just sad.
Yeah, it was pretty heavy.
Yeah, it made me feel lonely.
Yeah. It was pretty heavy.
Yeah. And there are two for Swimming in the Sea, because there's the one where the guy takes the girl everywhere.
Right, right.
That one's really great, too.
Well, that one, it was weird. What ended up happening was the guy, that with Robert Rodriguez did one, and then Jeremiah Jones did one. Both of them turned out great.
Yeah.
Jeremiah Jones was actually supposed to do one for this song called Unpromised Land. But then at the last minute, he was like, Swimming in the Sea works better.
Yeah.
Musically. So he ended up just turning that video in. With Swimming in the Sea, so we ended up with two Swimming in the Seas and no Unpromised Land video, which was pretty hilarious, but not hilarious at the same time, because now we had two videos that were both great, but of course Robert Rodriguez, a lot more people know him, so the record company really wanted to push the Robert.
And that one's great, too.
Great, awesome, loved it, and it was cool. I mean, that was just Robert in a handheld,
you can tell,
camera, and he just killed it. I mean, it was like going back to doing mariachi, and it was killer watching him work. The guy is amazing.
I didn't know if you had. I mean, I figured there were so many that I didn't know if you had put input into them. But it's good to know that you didn't. It's good to know that you wanted to see what people could do, bring you like turn. You know what I mean? Like what they interpreted your song as.
Well, I figured too, you know, they're not getting paid anything. I mean, that $1,000 would basically cover their budget for making it, you know, on a shoestring budget. So it was really about them making their art, you know. I think at the end of the day, the thing that matters is the work, not the money that you make. Like if somebody told me, you know, you could be really rich and be as successful as Taylor Swift or something, but you'd have to do something different. You'd have to make some music maybe that you didn't. Like, I'm just going to say Creed. Like, if somebody said, at the end of your life, your whole catalog will be the Creed catalog. But you'll have made millions of dollars, and your kids will go to fine schools, and you'll live in a big house, and you can travel wherever you want to travel. And you'll be in the Hall of Fame. But like, no, I don't want any of that.
Creed is so not going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Again, that's another band that I really haven't spent any time listening to the Creed catalog. It might be amazing. I don't know. I just have this idea of Creed sucking.
Yeah, me too.
Or their whole catalog sounding like the couple of Creed songs that I've heard that I don't like at all.
Right.
But maybe they have others. Maybe all of the rest of their catalog is stuff
amazing
that I like.
Yeah.
And it's just the three hits they had are really horrible.
Man, I don't know, but I doubt it.
I kind of doubt it.
Yeah. So you're doing this Pledge Music that it ends in a couple of weeks. And you're doing, is this the third or fourth album with Dwight?
This is like, we did Lovely Creatures, perfect day. I did a Christmas album called Christmas Time, Burden of Proof. So four albums.
Yeah.
Now.
Wow.
This will be the fifth album.
And you guys have recorded it already?
It's recorded. It's being mixed. We're almost done mixing it, and then it'll be mastered, and then we'll be releasing it. It's supposed to be released February 14th. That's what we're shooting for. It was supposed to be done, actually, about a month ago. And you know how it goes. It just...
takes a long time.
Stuff happened. And
let me ask you a question. When you bring in songs, I know that you edit yourself. Does Dwight also? Because I know he's a pretty strongly opinionated fellow.
He's not scared. Well, I rely on his opinion a lot when it comes to kind of picking the songs. I usually try to get him down to about 50 songs.
Which is still a lot of fucking songs for the album.
And then... usually between the two of them, I'll send them to him and we'll get it down to about 30. And then for this album, I guess we had it down to maybe 22 or 23 songs. And then I put in the stipulation that I'm only going to record songs that I play live, with the band and solo. So that immediately cut out some songs that I don't play with the band or I don't play solo.
Why is that you would do that?
Well, the thing that I realized on Burden of Proof was there's a lot of songs on that record that I just don't play live. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to put out another album that I'm not going to play the whole thing live.
Okay.
So when this album comes out, when you come see me play, you'll hear me play all these songs. And I put a lot of songs on there that I haven't recorded on the last three albums because they just didn't fit on any of those albums. Like there's a couple of rap songs that I don't think I've ever released... a Bob Schneider record with rap, like real rap songs.
Right.
They're not real rap songs, but they're as close as I'm gonna go to rapping on a record. But I play them at every show, so I was like, I'm gonna put them on a record.
Yeah,
even though they're not necessarily.
Do when you pick out the songs for the record, do you go for? Because I know that Perfect Day, weren't you like going for like a good feeling album?
I was
something you could listen to on your boat.
Yeah, it was like a deal, like, I wanted to make a record where you weren't going to skip any songs because there was kids around, or it was too heavy, or too angry.
Right.
Like, they were all kind of like, they fit into that sort of hanging out, having a barbecue sort of date. But I said that, but then there's still some super heavy songs on that album.
Right.
Like, there's that song, God Will Destroy Everything That You Love if you live long enough, which is not necessarily a great song if you got kids hanging out and just trying to enjoy the day.
No. What about Luke? Do you ever, like, go and listen to that?
Well, Luke's, I play everything that I write for Luke and have him weigh in on it, and he likes a lot of it. When he was 4 or 5, I gave him Lovely Creatures when it first came out, and he like just held on to the CD for like a week. He would like sleep with it.
Wow, and, that's awesome.
It was amazing. It just broke my heart.
Yeah,
I've never really felt that good about anything really, because I had my picture on it, you know, and it just, you know, when your kid loves you like that, that's just
cool.
Hard to
even
imagine anything like that. So he's been listening. So when he's at my house, I'm divorced from his mom, but when he's at my house, that's the music he listens to when he goes to bed at night. So
that's awesome.
And he's been listening to it for like 5 or 6 years now. And like when the next record came out, we tried that. I was like, hey, I got a new record. Let's put this in for your bedtime music. And he did that for a couple nights. He's like, I want to go back to Lovely Creatures. And so he knows every single word of that.
Wow.
It's pretty crazy.
That's awesome. Well, what I was thinking is the way that people shelter their kids. I don't know if you were for music, but like there was no music. There was no music except like my mom didn't want me to listen to Wings because they were kind of pussies.
Right.
And so literally like that, there was no music. I couldn't listen to.
Sure.
And so, that really did become like 70s, like pop music. That's why I was so into it, was because I had to have it. Like that was my music. Love Will Keep Us Together and shit like that. Oh. I couldn't listen to it loud in my house because my mom would fucking flip out. You know? But I remember when Will and Bliss, when Macaulay got into like Eminem.
Uh-huh. And she was freaking out, like he wanted to dye his hair blonde and stuff, and she wanted to, you know, she didn't want him to listen to Eminem, and Will was trying to get you know, make it, we used to listen to Kiss albums, you know, that was okay,
right,
and I just didn't know if that how that went with someone like you who has music that can be so raunchy and like out of order.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. The language is not a big taboo in my house. The use of the language is the problem, you know? Like, the word fuck and shit and goddamn or whatever, like, I'm fine with those words being used. It's just like, you know, like you calling somebody a fucker. Like,
right.
Hey, you stupid fuck.
Yeah,
that's right. Not cool. That's mean.
Yeah.
But fuck, I just... Ow, fuck.
Yeah.
I just did my, you know, it's not a big deal to me.
Yeah.
And using the word motherfucker in a song, I'm totally fine with it, you know, or the word bitch or whatever. If it's not used in some sort of misogynistic way, you know, if it's like, you know, it's just part of life. It's just language. It's just it's a sound, you know, to get all bent out of shape about it, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But some people think it's rude. And I think he needs to learn, like, oh, you know, some people are going to find this language offensive. But he learns that at school. You know, it's not appropriate at school. He knows the difference between being at school and being at home. And he, it's funny because I've tried to get him to, like, use some profanity. Like, I have an outgoing message on my machine. I think, is it still on there where it's like, hey, you've reached Bob Schneider's number. He's trying to work out some shit or something.
Yeah.
It took forever for him to like say the word shitty, just would keep cracking up. And I have a song that I play live where I use the word fuck a lot in the song, and he's seen me play a couple times live, and I'll just watch him as I'm singing that song, and every time I say the word fuck or fucking,
starts laughing.
He just starts cracking up. It's so funny.
Yeah.
He just thinks it's hilarious.
That's awesome. Does he get to see you play a lot?
He's seen me play a few times.
Like Nutty Brown and stuff like that.
No, not Nutty Brown. Just some shows here and there. I guess I took him to his first show when he was like 5, maybe. But he's seen a lot of live music. I've taken him to ACL before, you know, starting when he was like 3. We've been to that and seen a bunch of music.
Do you go see a lot of music?
I don't. I don't hardly ever go out actually and see anything. I'm either playing or at home with Luke, and then. I mean, I literally have maybe one night a week at most where I'm not playing or I don't have my son, and I don't want to go out.
Right.
I just want to, maybe I'll go see a movie or something or go out to dinner. Right. But the idea of going to a club, I mean, I'll go see somebody if they're, you know, like Jace Mraz just played. He's a buddy of mine. Yeah. So I'll go see him play or, you know, if something's happening that I really want to, you know,
like I've if the Prince, Pulse show, I mean.
Yeah, like,
Pulse is hard not to go see.
Well, yeah, Pulse was in town and he was playing. He's, you know, one of my best friends, so I went and saw him play and regretted it immediately. Like, I was like, why am I here? Like, because we'd been hanging out that day and he told some half true, half bullshit story about hanging out with me, and I was just so embarrassed.
I think he knows how to speak in that legend way where the half truth half, you know, like you don't know what it is.
Well the thing about him is like he's a great observer, and like we'll be hanging out and a lot of the things he said were true, but then he'll spin it. He makes himself look like the good guy. and he spins it enough to where you're like, well, that's not totally true, but enough of it's true that you can't really like deny it.
Yeah.
Because the stuff that's shameful or the stuff that made me feel uncomfortable is the true stuff.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, am I really that way? You know, it just made me sound like this eccentric dickhead that's like living out in the country, and like all I talk about is poetry
right,
and,
I remember it, yes.
And caterpillars on my bushes and stuff. And it's just like, that's one time in my life I was like looking at these caterpillars on this plant, and I was talking about poetry, but we talked about a ton of shit.
Yeah.
Of course, none of that other stuff was funny.
Right,
none of it,
of course.
would make a good story.
He knows how to tell a story.
He knows the parts that are going to be funny and that people are going to dig. And but at my expense. And I told him, I was like, I'm going to come to your show, motherfucker.
Just don't
talk about me. Don't put me on the spot. And of course, as soon as I walked in, he launched into that story. Because all he wants to do is entertain, and he'll put anybody up on the chopping block as long as it's entertaining. And
sometimes it seems like he's gonna die at those shows. Doesn't it seem like that?
It does. It's too much. It's really no. It's true. It's too much for me to take. I think it's hard for people to go. He really puts people on edge, like for the whole show. Because it's real scary. It's like watching somebody walk across two buildings on a tightrope with no net.
Yeah.
And he could die at any moment. And I think a little bit of that people can take. But for me, I don't want to watch that for 2 hours. It's too much for me.
That's a lot.
And so I'll go see a Steve Polk show, and then I won't go back for a while because it's too much. It's too stressful for me.
Yeah.
But he's an amazing entertainer. He's incredibly funny.
Yeah.
And he's very, and the other thing, the other reason I can't go see him too often is he's so good.
Yeah, it makes you feel
good. At making the people in the audience feel appreciated and loved. He's so good at that. And so the next time I'm playing live, I go, God, I'm such a dick. Yeah, like, yeah. I don't do any of this stuff.
Yeah.
I don't take chances like he does. I don't tell the audience how much I love them or make them feel so special. And so it kind of fucks with my head. So unfortunately, I can't see him play too often.
I did a show with him. And you know those... I have a friend that's a comic that actually named his album this. You Were Good Too. The fucking lady wrote it down on a napkin and handed it to me.
You Were Good Too.
Whoever you were good too.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well.
Anyway, that's what I felt like when I played with him too. Because I was like, he's so, like, he really gives so much. Before we get on to just a Steve Poltz thing, how do you listen to music now? Like, where do you find music? What do you do?
I don't listen to a lot of music. I listen mostly to podcasts, and they're all, you know, like, How Did This Get Made, or that new Serial podcast, or
what is Adam that? Carolla. I was just talking to someone about that a couple of days ago, and I meant to look it up. It's about serial killers?
It's about it's this lady who's been working on This American Life for 10 years or whatever, and so it sounds like, it has the sound of This American Life.
Right.
But it's, the podcast is about this murder that happened like 15 years ago in Baltimore, I think. And so the whole podcast, the whole season of the podcast, the 12 or 15 hour long shows, is just about this one murder investigation.
Wow.
That this woman, Sarah Koenig, worked on for a year. So, but it's, I guess it's like the most downloaded podcast ever.
Ever, yeah. Something.
So I just started listening to it yesterday. It's cool.
Okay.
Sounds good.
So you don't listen to a lot of music.
So I don't listen to a lot of music.
But do you use Spotify or anything like that? You have like satellite? You just listen to podcasts and...
I don't have Spotify because I'm angry at Spotify, or have a resentment against it.
Because of financially.
Yeah, it just makes buying CDs unnecessary. And obviously I have to let go of the idea that people are going to buy CDs. And just look at it like, well, making music now is about, you know, what is recording music now? You know, why spend the time and energy to do that? Because if people think that that's something that they can get for free, and they don't get it for free on Spotify, obviously you can, you know, I think everything is gonna go to the sort of streaming model, I think.
But you don't keep your stuff off of there.
Well, it's not up to me. It's really, it's the record companies that put that stuff.
But with
up
this
there.
Album King Kong.
With the album King Kong, I can either put it up there or not put it up there. And I like the idea of putting half of it up there. Like, I like
that's a good idea too.
I like the idea of doing that, but the problem with Spotify and the problem that I have with it, like, I would love for people to, if they're going to listen to a record, to kind of pay for it, because then that helps you make another, you know this, because you're a musician,
yeah,
and you know it costs money to go into the studio and record a record properly.
Yeah.
So if people buy the music from you or from your record company, then you can go back in with that money and make another record.
Right.
But with Spotify, you don't get paid enough to do that.
Right.
But it's great if you want to listen to anything that's ever been written, you know, and pay $10 a month. It's awesome. And I know a lot of people that do it. I just don't want to give them my money.
I understand that.
So if I find a record that I like, I'll just go on iTunes and buy it usually. But then I don't listen to it. I'll listen to it once or twice and then stop listening to it, just because I don't listen to a lot of music. I'll listen to whatever song I wrote in the last couple days in my car. I'll listen to that maybe 2 or 3 times, you know, to see if I want to edit it or make it better or see what it sounds like. And then other than that, I'm calling people, listening to podcasts.
Just living.
Living, but not listening to a lot of music. Not,
is there a point where, was there a point when you did a lot?
I think when I was in my teens is probably when I listened to the most music, you know, get stoned, listen to music,
yeah,
or hang out at home, and, you know, just, you know, I used to, you could buy a record and you put it on your record player and you just put the needle on and you just sit there with the album cover and read the lyrics and let it sink in to your, like, D, and, you know, it gets down to your bones, like, and then it's with you your whole life. That stuff that I listened to as a teenager, I love it my whole life. And then stuff in my 20s, I still love it to a certain degree, but not to that degree.
Right.
And then in my 30s, I just started working.
Yeah, and, so much.
And I, you know, I don't know what I like from my 30s. Or my 40s now, really. I mean, like that All About That Bass song. I love that song.
Yeah.
But in 5 years, am I going to care about that song?
No.
I mean, it'll be cool when it comes out. I'm like, oh, that's that All About That Bass.
Yeah.
But it won't be like, you know, Sign of the Times or something.
Right.
From Prince or, I don't know, like License to Ill.
Yeah.
You know, which came out when I was when I was 17. I listened to that record.
Really?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
License to Ill?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I guess it did.
I listened to that song. I listened to that whole album. I knew every word on that record. Or that Violent Femmes record.
Yeah.
That came out, I think, my first year in college. I could sing the entire record from beginning to end.
There's a lot of records that I had for that. I was really into British music then.
Like what kind?
What was happening. Like The Fix.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a big band for me.
Well, I love that song, One Thing Leads to Another.
Yeah.
One of the greatest songs.
That whole record is really... I still listen to that whole record.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. There's like this long... I was super into... that guy was like the start of my guitar sound, which is weird. It was like really compressed and chorused. And it sounded like it barely sounded when you hit it, and then the sound like starts bringing... You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
That same sound.
I love the way that record sounds.
But I was going to say this thing about Spotify and people buying music. And you have this Pledge Music campaign, which once again ends in 2 weeks. And I just want to make sure that people know so that they can contribute to it. But don't you think it's fucking weird that people don't buy albums, but they contribute to a thing before you make the album?
Well, here's the way it works. If the record hasn't come out yet, you can't get it for free.
Right.
So if you like the artist, which I do, like Mike Doty, he's done 2 of these now, and both times I've bought the album before it came out.
Okay.
But now if the album's out and I can get it for free, and it's easy to get albums for free, mm-hmm, music for free now, as soon as I have it for free in my iTunes, I don't want to buy it. No matter how much I like the artist, I'll go buy their t-shirt, I'll go buy an album,
yeah,
like the vinyl,
yeah,
which I never listened to. Which just sits there.
I listen to yours.
Which sits there in my vinyl collection, but I don't listen to it because it's a pain in the ass putting the record on the player. But I'll buy it because I love it. So So hopefully what people will do is they'll buy the record before it comes out because they know that it's because of the previous history.
Yeah.
The relationship that we have, they'll buy it because they know it's going to be good. But again, if it hasn't come out yet, you can't get it for free. So people will pay right. for it. Now, if they get burned, if the record comes out and it sucks and then I try to do it again, they're going to be like, fuck you.
Yeah.
They're not going to pledge again.
Yeah. But so, you put out enough stuff, I think, that you get, they can gamble on it.
Hopefully. I mean,
you have the most and coolest incentives of any of the things I've ever seen.
Oh, cool.
Yours are really awesome.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I don't, it's weird. I don't know if I'm going to do the pledge thing again, to tell you the truth. It's such a pain in the ass. Like, I like the idea of a record company just paying for everything, taking care of sure. everything, and taking the profits and doing all that stuff. Like, all of this stuff that I'm doing, I guess the idea is that I will own the music when I'm done. I'll be able to make a little bit of money off of it. But it's a lot of work
yeah.
to do it this way. And we'll see. We'll see how it goes. And we'll see, you know, if there's some money to be made. I mean, I've been making records since, God, since 91. With bands first and then Bob Schneider Records now for 14 years. And besides getting an advance from a record company, which I've gotten two advance checks in my entire career from a record company where they advance you money yeah. towards sales. But other than those two advance checks, I've never received a check from a record company in my entire career. So I've never made a penny from my album sales from record companies. So I don't know why I get so upset about Spotify, because it's just more of the same.
Right.
I'm not going to I've never made any money.
Right.
Now, granted, I've sold records at my merch booth.
Right.
So I'm selling my own merch. So I'm making money off of that. Like a record store
right,
would
right,
make
right.
money. But I'm not making money.
But you have to go play the gig.
I have to go play the gig and then
I mean,
set
it's
up
like there's
a
blue
a little,
collar. Yeah. There's a blue collar aspect to it. It's not like you're just fucking like you make a record and then you just like lay back in your golden
no.
bed on your silk sheets completely nude.
Well,
and,
yeah.
And money rains on you.
Right. There's that thing where like Mick Jagger's laying in bed naked with some model and then they're checks coming through the mail slot.
Yeah.
For hundreds yeah. of thousands of dollars every day. That's never happened. Right. And I don't make any money off syncs, which is a sync is where your music is used in a commercial or in a movie or a television
yeah.
show, and you get money for that. I haven't made money on that in probably 12 years.
Right.
I did for a little bit at the beginning on Lonely Land, but other than that, hardly anything in the last 12 years.
Yeah.
Maybe one or two placements.
Yeah. It's interesting to see what people, because Tony Scalzo's conversation about Spotify is like, I thought he was going to kill me when I told him that I signed up for it and got it. But I mean, I understand that. His life, it revolves around those. He doesn't have much of a blue collar career. His was made on that sort of
sure,
like, stratospherical one song
right.
that rains money on you.
Right. Well, Fastball sold a couple million records, and when they sold a couple million records, they made a couple million dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So he probably, I don't know how much he made, but he probably made a million or $2 million
yeah.
out of that record.
Sure.
But if that record would have come out now, and it would have been just as successful as it was then, he wouldn't have made any of that money.
No.
He would have never gotten a check, and if he would have gotten a check, it would have been for maybe $1,000 or something.
Yeah.
And, so that sucks.
Yeah, it does suck.
It's you can it's a weird thing that where like at one point you could make money selling records and now you can still make money playing live.
Yeah.
But even that's real tricky. That's a tricky thing. Like I only make money playing in Texas. I don't make money playing outside of Texas because the expenses are so high to take
with
a band,
band
yeah, on the road
yeah.
that I don't make any money that way. I don't make any money on record sales. So the money that I make is playing live in Texas, which is probably why I play so many shows in Texas.
And, well, it's also like, it's awesome that you are able to do that too, because there are, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
It's the same way that I feel about Skyrocket. There are friends of mine that are like, I can't believe, you know, that you end up in a cover band. Like, dude, at least I fucking like have a job. I don't have to play like 86 coffee shop gigs a week.
Right.
Like, or fucking the corner of El Arroyo, which I did before Skyrocket, you know, three nights a week playing, you know.
Sure, yeah.
For, you know, an eighth of the money that I make with Skyrocket. At least I get to be with my fucking friends, you know, and stuff like that.
Yeah, you're playing...
And I've gotten better, and I've got the time to write more songs, do shit like this, right, and get involved in life, which you do when you get older.
Right. I mean, you're playing in Skyrocket, and you're making in 2 hours what somebody will take 40 hours to make.
Sometimes, yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Not all the time, but...
But that's amazing.
But it's incredible.
Yeah.
And that gives you the time to be an artist, to be creative, to do your podcast, to write songs,
yeah,
to do whatever you
do.
Want
other
to do.
Stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
So we, you know, we find our avenues. I want to talk to you about, you're doing these theater shows, like the Yucca and the Green Hall, Granada Theater and the Paramount Theater for New Year's. Are those holiday shows? Are they
no,
specific? Those are just
those are
playing
just,
theaters.
Those are regular shows. I did a holiday show at the Moody Theater 2 weeks ago.
Okay,
and in
oh, right,
Houston okay. at the Collin Theater in the Wortham Center.
Oh right, my uncle Chuck actually is. Don't you know Bob Schneider? He's trying to tell you were, he's famous. He's playing the theater over here.
Yeah, yeah. I do those once a year. I usually do them either the week before or the week after Thanksgiving. And then I do a Valentine's show
right.
on the 14th at the Moody Theater.
What are the... is that going to be like a record release show, assuming everything works out this year?
Yeah, we're going to release the record that day, but that will be a Moonlight Orchestra show, which
okay.
is a big sort of production that I do.
Right. And that the holiday shows are Moonlight Orchestra?
And the holiday shows are Moonlight Orchestra.
Okay.
As well.
And that's Kevin McKinney, Kevin Lovejoy?
Kevin Lovejoy, Chris Marsh, J.J. Johnson, Ephraim Owens, David Grissom, Tosca Strings, Laura Scarborough.
Yeah.
So it's a big band, and it's they're all the best of the best.
Yeah, those are the best.
It's a real classy show.
Yeah. Anar said to say hi to you, by the way. I don't know why that just dawned on me.
Oh.
I was talking to him on the way up here.
Wow. Yeah. What's he doing?
He's still playing with Kelly Clarkson. He's doing that this weekend, but she's not working all the time. He's looking for gigs and doing stuff.
That's a pretty high-profile gig.
Yeah. Yeah. He's done well with it, man.
Yeah. Well, he's great. Here's what it is about the music business that and about life, the life business
okay.
in general.
Business of life.
It's not how good you are, because everybody's good.
Yeah.
Everybody's good. It's about how good of a hang you are.
Yeah.
And he's a great hang.
Yeah.
So everybody, there's 1,000 people who can do his job, but there's not 1,000 people that you want to hang out with. He's the guy that you want to hang out with. The reason that George Clooney is such a huge star and the reason that these directors use him in all his movies, he's a great hang.
Yeah.
People enjoy him.
People always say that, yeah.
He's cool. He's funny.
Kyle Crushem.
Yeah, he knows.
Same kind of dude.
Yeah, Kyle Crushem, exactly. He knows when to hold them, when to fold them.
Yeah.
You know, when to talk, when not to talk.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's, you know, and that, every area of life is that way. So it's like, be nice, be courteous, make people feel special, and you will go far. And be a dick, and treat people shitty.
Yeah.
And you might have a moment of success. It won't last, and eventually you'll be forgotten.
Yeah.
Dave Matthews, one of the nicest guys I've ever met in my life.
Really?
Absolutely.
Seems like he would be.
He makes everybody feel special. He makes everybody feel wonderful and important.
Yeah.
And like he cares about them.
Yeah.
And he's lived his whole life that way. And he's great. He's really good.
Yeah.
As well. But there's a lot of people that are really good.
Yeah.
Ian
McLaughlin.
That don't.
He just passed
Ian
away.
Ian McLaughlin.
Same dude.
A wonderful dude.
Wonderful
guy.
Always made you feel special.
I didn't know him hardly at all.
Yeah.
I've met him four or five times in my life. And every time I met him, he made me feel like he knew who I was, thought I was the fucking tits,
yeah,
and just was so excited to see me.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, what a nice guy.
Yeah.
What a sweet dude.
Yeah.
But all he did was just make me feel like I was important and special.
A lot of it was just being present, you know? He wasn't up his own ass.
Oh, no.
He knew what was going on with people. And
yeah.
Just because he was in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and lived in little old Austin, he knew who the rest of the people were in his community.
Well, again, the reason that he was in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the reason that the Stones loved him.
Yeah, he's a great hang.
Is because he's that guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he has always been that guy, probably, yeah. his whole life. And so, I mean, that's really the key to everything is just, you know, caring, empathy, yeah. you know.
Yeah. Let's see how long we can keep this stare. Empathy, man, I love you.
Well, you're great at it. You're wonderful at it.
At empathy?
Well,
I feel for people.
I do.
I really do.
No, you genuinely care. I feel
somebody calls me an asshole though once a week. In some way, I did. I met like, oh hey, I'm Johnny, and then they're like, oh, I met you like five fucking times, dude. I'm like,
well. You can't please everybody
I know.
All the time.
Yeah.
And we're living in a world now where people are just real mean all the time.
Like it's okay to be. Yeah.
People are just so rude.
Yeah.
And it amazes me,
yeah.
actually. And it's all done. There's a weird disconnect, I guess, because all the social stuff, all the social media and being able to like leave comments anonymously.
It's a weird both connect and disconnect. It's like a connection where you could reach people, but the emotional connection is totally gone. There's no empathy. You don't feel for the person you're insulting.
Yeah, it's so weird. I was watching this. Oh my God. Have you seen that Chelsea Peretti? It just came up on Netflix.
No, I saw it's on there.
It's worth seeing. But she was like talking about Albert Einstein, like if they would have had like a Twitter or like social media back when he was starting out. And he was like, did a little thing where he's like, yeah, equals, well, I'm not really sure yet, but I'm working on it. And then the comments are like, Jew, bitch, fuck yourself, go fuck yourself, Jew. And then Albert's like, I guess I'm just going to give up. Jew, bro. Just people hating for no reason.
I just had David Comey, the attorney that rocks.
Oh, right, yeah.
On. And he gets a lot of that.
Well.
And you know what? I have friends that are comics that have like fucking 4 minutes just on him.
Oh, sure.
And it's rough. Well, but have you ever met him?
I haven't met him, but
he's super, super nice. It's unbelievable.
This is the only thing I know about him is my good buddy Adam Temple.
Yeah, plays with him.
Who's really, he's homeless now.
He is?
Doesn't have a lot. I mean, he's staying on somebody's couch, but right. He was homeless the first six years that I knew him.
Yeah.
He was homeless when I started the scabs with him. The reason I started the scabs was to get him off my couch. He stayed on my couch for a year and a half.
Sandy told me one time, I saw him like a year and a half, two ago.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, man, I was worried about Adam. I think I should see if maybe he, does he need a place to stay? And she goes, don't let him stay at your house.
No.
That's what she said.
No.
And her eyes got real big.
No, you don't. Because he's a sweet guy.
Yeah.
And when he gets on your couch, you won't want to kick him out.
Sure.
Because you're like, he's good at not taking up a lot of space and just being funny.
Yeah.
So he won't, he's real hard to get rid of. But he's playing with him.
Yeah.
In his band. And like he showed up at Saxon Pub the other night and he was like had a car. And I was like, man, whose car is that? And he's like, oh, it's my car. Like, you know, I have a car.
Yeah.
He's like, and he told me, I guess, that guy had lent it to him and was kind of supporting him. And, you know, taking care of him. So I was like,
he's a really kind guy. I was real curious about him.
Well, you know, it's interesting. He's a lawyer, you know, which is, I have a weird relationship with lawyers where, like, to be a lawyer, you have to be smart enough to be able to pass the bar. And, you know, you have to have something going. You have to be pretty smart. And a lot of the lawyers that I've met are not just smart, but they're real funny. Yeah. And they're go-getters.
Yeah.
So on one hand, they're really likable, and but on the other hand, they're lawyers.
Yeah.
So it's a weird love-hate relationship. Yeah. But here you got a lawyer who's got these big dreads and putting his face up on billboards.
He's got a band and stuff.
And he's got a band. So, you know, that's not normal.
No.
You know, it's easy to make fun of.
Yeah.
But I admire people like that. I mean, when I was a kid, the only comics I read were sort of outcasts, like Dracula and the Hulk and Luke Cage. Just, you know, like, not...
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't like Superman or Batman or, you know, that didn't... Or even, like, Spider-Man. That all seemed very boring to me. I like people that were on the fringe. So that guy definitely seems like he's a fringe guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a total fringe guy.
So, again, I don't know anything about him. And easy to make fun of people like that.
Totally. Sure. Yeah. I mean, he's got a billboard.
Exactly.
That's just fast enough.
Yeah, yeah.
If you or anyone you know has been injured in an accident, please say.
Well, he's an injury lawyer.
That's part of it, yeah.
The worst.
Before we go, I saw Pat Brown this week.
Uh-huh.
Saw a lot of dudes from the old times of Mr. Rocket Baby. And that was weird. We played together.
You and Pat?
No, Mr. Rocket Baby.
How
like
was that?
Like the guys. It was fun. It was weird. There was a little... there was some detachment there.
Uh-huh.
And... we didn't even, like, sit down and go eat something together.
Uh-huh.
As a group.
Where'd you guys play?
We played at that one-to-one bar. Yeah. It was weird. I think it was just kind of for Danny.
Yeah.
Definitely felt like there was people that weren't there to see us, you know. Uh-huh. I mean, in the band.
Sure, yeah.
To see the other members.
Yeah.
So. But it was nice to see Pat.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I remember the old times.
Pat's a sweet guy.
Yeah.
You know. It is weird. It is weird doing those reunion things. I kind of stopped doing all of it a little while ago. I didn't find a lot of enjoyment. We were doing Scabs reunions. We're not reunions. We were just never really stopped playing with the Scabs. But I stopped doing those a couple years ago.
And, really?
Uh-huh. And we did some Joe Rockhead shows.
Yeah.
But we haven't done those in at least 10 years.
I don't even sleep with girls I used to date. Like, I really, like... I had the fuck out of there when I'm done. And so this was like the first time I ever did anything like that. And there's a lot of weird feelings.
It is weird, and it's...
There's a reason you know why you're not still together, too.
Well, I will say this. The people that I hung out with, the people that I dated from 20 years ago, or, you know, I'd say 20 years ago now, because I've been sober now for 19 years, so...
Really? Wow.
Yeah, but... So for the people that I played with and dated 20 years ago when I was that other person, very few of those people I have anything in common with anymore. I mean, occasionally I do, but I know those people, and I see them regularly. Yeah. And the ones that I don't, that I haven't run into in a while, when I run into those people, I'm like, wow, what happened here?
Yeah.
Like, they got stuck somewhere. Or they just stopped growing, or they stopped caring, or something. It's weird. And because some people continue, progress, learn, change, and then some people don't. Mm-hmm. And it's baffling when they don't change or grow. Or I don't know how you can stay the same.
I don't either.
Over the long haul. But yeah. It's weird. One of the guys that I didn't start the Scabs with, but was joined the Scabs early on, Charles Weezer, he just died.
I know.
Liver failure, I guess. Like this week, I think. weird.
Yeah. That guy was always a really nice guy. The guy, Richard from Mr. Rocket Baby, he sang when Richard's wife walked down the aisle, I remember, and then also I sang Hava Nagila with them at the wedding.
And he died, Charles.
No. I just was remembering all that stuff.
Right.
Everybody's dead.
What's that?
Everyone's dead. They're all dying.
That's horrible. We're all dead.
It sounds horrible. I mean,
no, we're literally.
Yeah, that's the, somebody's that's
listening.
The only thing.
Somebody's listening to this podcast now in the future, and you and me are both dead, for sure.
Fuck, that's weird. And every.
Yeah. I mean, we're dead soon, both of us. Well, and everybody on the planet.
This thing took on a new meaning when Mac died last week. I mean, it was weird having that.
Yeah, man.
Having a document of being with someone like that. You know what I mean?
I have phone numbers. I have messages from people that are from dead people on my phone. And voicemails from dead people that I just keep because I don't want to delete them. And that's the way it's going
to
go.
Do you listen to
him? Do I listen to him?
Yeah, sometimes.
Every once in a while.
My grandpa died this year, and we were real close. And I guess I watched some video stuff that I have of him.
Don't you just feel like... I feel like when people die, they're just everywhere. Then they know what I'm doing. And they know what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I can't remember. I heard this thing where you die twice. When you actually physically die, and then the last time someone says your name. There's some Indian tribe that thinks that.
Well, yeah, because you live in the hearts of all the people that you knew.
Yeah, that's
and then when all those people die, then you really die.
Yeah.
That could be.
I think people are everywhere inside people.
When I think of Charles, I know his body's dead. I know he's dead. But I just think that now Charles, I can communicate with him where I don't have to call him or text him or visit him.
Yeah.
I can just go, what's up, Charles? And I really have nothing to say much to the dead, really. Because they know what I am and they know my heart. So what's there to communicate, really? Because... most communication is just a bunch of bullshit anyways.
Yeah.
It's just us trying to sound like we know something or try to connect in a way. But if you can connect where I can look into your heart and know who you are and know how you feel.
We don't have to talk.
We don't need to talk about shit.
No.
We just, that's who you are and how you feel. And you know me and I know you.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah.
Then we can just hang out.
Yeah.
And then look at shit. And we don't even need to comment, because as soon as we look at it, we both know how we feel about it.
Right.
So.
It's a new form of communication. Heart talk.
Heart talk with Johnny Gotti.
Yeah. Or with Bob Schneider.
That would be the most boring podcast ever. It'd just be silence. And just breathing.
I miss that they don't play Muzak in the grocery stores anymore, but that's what I would want in the background of that podcast, is just some Muzak. I do miss music. I miss those weird versions of songs.
What do they play? They just play
They just play the actual songs at the grocery store.
Oh, that's true, right?
Yeah,
right.
I heard The Cure the other day. It was weird.
Muzak or The Cure?
The Cure. I heard The Cure in the grocery store. I was like, this is...
Was it Head on the Door? Ding.
No.
Ding, 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 ding.
No, it was
ding.
Friday I'm in Love.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
How good is that band?
Amazing.
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 Incredible.
Huge influence on me.
Better than Creed. Like, we could agree on that, right?
Totally.
But again, have I listened to more Cure than The Creed?
Yeah.
For sure.
I hope so. Unless you heard, the three songs of The Cure that are the most amazing. Those three songs are amazing.
I'm going to go... Here's what I'm never going to do. Make myself listen to Creed. That's horrible. I feel bad for those guys.
I'm going to start sending you songs and be like, hey, Bob, what do you think of my new song? And then you're going to go oh, it's terrible. And I'm going to be like, secretly, you just listened to another Creed song.
Well, that's
Uncle Chuck also called me. Sorry, this is really funny. Same guy called to tell me that he was broke. The guy from... I was reading in the paper, the guy from Creed's broke.
I don't ever believe that. I don't believe that guy's broke.
You have to hire a publicist to go get that kind of... to get that kind of press.
I think broke for him is...
Yeah. Okay. Different broke. Yeah.
It's a different kind of broke.
Yeah.
It's like he had to sell his house. He's living in a really nice
apartment or something.
Or a really nice smaller house.
Yeah. Fuck it.
Or he could be broke.
Yeah. Are you doing Mondays all this month?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll see you Monday. I love those shows, man.
They can
you're a tremendous entertainer.
That is my favorite show for sure. Yeah. And they can be transformative and transcendent. And they can go off the rails. I mean,
I like all three of those options.
I do too. If I feel safe and I'm watching a band, I probably won't ever go see them again. Yeah. If I feel scared,
yeah,
like I do with Pulse,
yeah,
I'll go see Pulse again. But Pulse, too scary.
Yeah.
So I like it just scary enough. I feel like we're scary enough. Yeah. Like I'm scary enough on Monday. I don't need to
do that every night.
I don't need to do it the whole show either. I feel like Pulse does it the whole night.
He lives like that. It's obvious that some sort of his addictive personality gets off on that. And his energy. And I mean...
Yeah, it's too much.
We did one of these. We walked 4 miles during it.
Yeah.
We literally walked 4 miles during the conversation.
Yeah, he's insane. He's truly insane. Yeah. And he doesn't realize it either. And I tell him this every time we talk.
He's happy to be there.
I look him right in the eye and go, Pultz, you don't know how insane you are, do you? And he's like, oh, no, I know I'm insane.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, you don't. Yeah. You don't understand it. Because I'm insane.
Yeah.
And I kind of know, but I don't. Yeah. And that's what insanity is when you don't when you realize don't how crazy you are. And I don't realize how crazy I am. But yeah. I can look at Pulse.
You realize how crazy he is.
And he doesn't.
Yeah.
At all.
No.
So. But. I do love him.
I love him too. He's a great guy. Thanks for doing this. People should give to your pledge music. You need to go somewhere, right?
Oh, shit, yeah. I'm going to be late.
Bob Schneider. What a great guy, man. I love talking to him. Known him for a long, long time. Be sure to give to his pledge music campaign. It ends in 2 weeks. So yeah, go in there and give to it. Let's get King Kong out. And to the people, all right? I want to thank Bob for taking the time to sit down and talk. And I did have a great time talking to him. If you don't know all of his work, get out there and listen to it. It was really interesting sitting down the last couple of days and listening to everything just kind of on shuffle. All of his official releases is what I was listening to. And man, it was mind-blowing. It's fucking incredible. The guy's a tremendous, tremendous artist. We're lucky to have him in this music community. What a fortunate person I am to be able to reach out and have him on this show, because he's also entertaining and a really sweet guy. So, Bob Schneider, thank you for coming by. You are a great guy. Don't forget, when you're out on the internet looking up Bob Schneider stuff, like at bobschneider.com, like our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? And you can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher. Subscribe there. Look us up. Do it. How did I get here? How about some more music from Bob Schneider? All right. Let's get down. It's not-